Blog Talk Radio.
Don Show. I'm Don Allen over in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, what's happening tonight?
Yes, sir. I can't complain, Don. This wind's been knocking us off our feet since Sunday almost, gust up to 60 mm-hmm. miles an hour. But no snow, because, boy, if we'd had snow with this, we'd have 25 feet of snow and drifting and everything else, man. But, you know, the weather is the weather, brother. We don't know what's going on up in that atmosphere. We don't know what's going to happen up in there, man. But, Don, I've got to do this right at the top here. I regret to announce that as an outgrowth of a major gun battle in North Minneapolis about an hour and a half ago, three young African-American men had been taken to hospital, if you will. One is in critical condition. The other two have so-called non-life-threatening. Gun battle took place along the 3900 block of Fremont Avenue North there. A lot of shots fired, man. You know, bullets flying everywhere. But anyways, we have what is the beginning of the spring offensive in the Twin Cities. You know, Don, you and I had been talking and been reflecting it here on the Don and Ron program. We thought that our leaders had the plan. They had initially said all they needed was $250,000 seed money. This was about a month ago. And that they would have a handle on the violence. Everyone that you hear talking up around that area of Fremont and West Broadway, you know, Knock and all those other organizations all say they're working with the cliques, gangs, whatever you want to refer to them. Yet we have these massive shootings going on. But they were really firing tonight up in that particular area. All three have been hospitalized, and as I said, one is in critical condition. He's expected to live. So we wanted to make sure that people move with caution. In North Minneapolis specifically, particularly up in that area. Again, we repeat again, a major gun battle along the 3900 block Fremont, and three young African-Americans shot and wounded. So it continues, my friend, it continues.
Yes, it does. You know, they you know, folks tell us over there, you know, that $250,000 is not going to solve anything over there, neither is that mental health model that we talked about last week. You know,
yeah.
So it's pretty interesting to see this stuff still going on, because you don't see those folks out in the streets at all, you know, when this stuff happens. I mean, reactive, you know, not proactive,
yeah.
Reactive.
Yeah, in fact, the $250,000 was to come out of the $1 million piece that has been awarded under the any number of programs dealing with safe cities, safe streets, and et cetera. I thought, Don, really, when the names were released by the office of Councilman Belong Yang almost 3 weeks ago, that the leadership would have been able to come together and the plan would be in place, because I repeat, and our phone lines are open. I will be, I hear the leadership, many meetings going on, UROC, the Urban League, different churches and et cetera. And they're saying they have the plan. Key word now, Don, is dialogue. We need dialogue. Okay. Now I heard our featured guest from last week, Commander Charles Adams, now head of the special unit, if you will, was on the Freddie Bell. You know Freddie Bell of KMLJ. He was on the program this morning at about 6-7 minutes. I missed it, but I've had a couple people relay to me the discussion. And you know, Commander Adams warned that it was time to stop playing games and making it appear that there was an, you know, a plan in place to deal with the problem. But obviously the gunmen less than a couple hours ago, you know, weren't listening. You know what I'm saying, Don?
No, yeah, they sure weren't. They sure weren't listening. That's not their forte.
Yeah. I understand you've got a story there you're looking at there over at Steel A. I'm looking at about $1.5 million worth of marijuana apprehended on the highway. Those were three African-Americans bringing drugs into
Minnesota. Yeah, a traffic stop.
$1,075,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm looking at it, and they got the brother's mugshot, you know, and the gentleman from St. Paul in a pickup truck said he had gone to California, and they caught him out there on the road with all that pot in their vehicle.
Going to California, or were they coming from California?
Well, the story isn't straight. They all had conflicting stories. You know, someone said that he told troopers he had flown to California after buying a truck from in-laws out there and was transporting it back to Minnesota, and he was doing this.
They had it in the panels and places like that. Oh, man, that was a setup.
They had it in the bed of the truck. So, you know, someone told them.
See, when they made a stop, probably depending on where it was coming from, they probably just stopped to have a bite to eat, to go to the bathroom, etc. The feds pulled up, used one of them sniffing dogs. All they had to do was have the dog walk around the truck. The dog gave the signal. They knew they had them. And so, I don't know, man. That's a lot on the streets, if you will. That's a part of the problem that we're faced with as a community and a people, that's basically the major economic base, drugs, if you will. That is going on. But again, I repeat, Don, that, you know, we've been hearing for the last number of months that the plan is in place. I know there is a document with 33 names on it of leadership and facilitators who have been meeting with the gangs and with the cliques and whatever else, you know, you want to identify them. And they said they had a handle on this, man. They asked for a meeting, maybe even kind of demanded a meeting with the MPD, City of Minneapolis, and et cetera. And that's where the $250,000 seed money came up. By the way, this money comes directly, as we talked about on last week's program here on the Don and Ron program, that money comes directly from the health department. That's kind of an interesting place for it to come from, don't you think so?
Oh, yes, that's very interesting. And Mr. Edwards, we haven't even given out that number, but it's 347-426-3904, and we have two callers holding. Should we get one?
Both of them. We're obligated to get both of them. Go right ahead. Mr. Allen, handle the call. Bring them in.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello, caller. 202. Okay.
What was that number? Was that prefix 602?
Oh, no, it was 202. You're live on the air. Caller? Okay, they probably don't want to see anything. I'm going to put you back in the queue and leave them there, okay? And, the other caller hung up as soon as I went there, so they were just listening in, I guess. Hopefully they'll call back. But, anyway.
The phone lines are wide open, you know, for any reflections, yes. I repeat again the breaking news here on the Don and Ron program. Major gun battle along the 3900 block, Fremont Avenue North. Three African-American individuals shot, wounded. One is in critical condition. The other two are allegedly non-life-threatening, whatever that means. You get shot, man. Anything can happen. Two were transported from the scene. The third individual was dropped off at the hospital. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
I don't think I pointed it out.
Yeah. There is other information, but I am not at liberty at this particular point in time to reflect upon that. The authorities will have to do that. The public information offices, PIOs for the MPD, will probably issue some kind of press release later this evening or et cetera. But again, And by the way, I see my phone here that I'm on, our satellite phone. I see somebody trying to call in, everybody trying to call. wrong number. Give that number again. Give that number again.
Yeah, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And then we do have a caller. We do have a caller.
Let's get the caller. We all callers get in tonight. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling from Missouri.
Hi. From where, sir?
Missouri.
Oh, but the voice sounds familiar. Yeah. Is this the gentleman that goes by the name of Steve?
Yeah, that's correct. That's right.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I had a question for you about Donald Trump's tweets over this weekend. I believe it was Saturday morning. And I was just wanted to get your opinion of that and also of a kind of larger issue that kind of looms behind that. And it may seem, you know, I don't know if I'm going way out on a limb or not, but I'm kind of wondering at this point if there's something, if there's a larger problem with President Trump going on.
Yeah, well, if you're asking that question, this is Mr. Edwards. If you're asking that question, I talked to your people in advance of the call coming in out of you seem to be in the Kansas and Missouri area. Here's the problem. Since I talked to you, sir, to your representatives a number of hours ago, there has been a new revelation, a new admission by the Trump administration and the Republican Party, and that is that they did scuttle a resolution at the Republican convention in Cleveland this past summer, which would have criticized and called for censure of the Russians for their attacks in the Ukraine. You know, for a long time, we were being told in the last 3 weeks that was totally untrue. You remember a number of individuals have emerged. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was that narrative that cost Donald Trump's first campaign manager to have to bail out, if you will. So what just happened about 3 hours ago is the Republican National Committee confirmed that there was a resolution and they gutted it. Now, that takes us to Saturday morning when the President of the United States, Donald Trump, and the 44th President of the United States, Barack Obama, has committed really a felony as well as maybe an act of treason as it pertains to violating a number of laws and constitutions. I was shocked. I cannot speak for my colleague, Mr. Allen, but, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, Comrade was more in bed in this country than we can even dare dream, if you will. The President Trump makes the allegation. He has provided no supporting evidence. Now him, or he, and the head of the FBI, James Comey, who had been a, you know, significant ally of the Republicans, are at loggerheads. I mean, I was shocked when I heard that Comey had sent representatives from the FBI under his custody and control over to the Justice Department to talk to Boss Sessions about they needed to indicate that there was no authenticity or accurateness to the tweet by President Trump. Attorney General Sessions has refused, declined, and rejected to do that. Now the House and Senate Intelligence Committees are now saying that they're going to investigate former President Barack Obama. This is the same Congress that declined to investigate anything with regards to Russia meddling in the 2016 election in the United States. I don't know. Sir, I have to tell you, I don't know how you guys look at it down there in the God-fearing Midwest, if you will. We just have some different standards here, man. And now the president, Trump, is saying that Barack Obama is a sick and evil man and et cetera. But here's my concern, sir, and certainly would like, you know, our colleague to join us, is that the country is so fragile right now. There is so much division. And in that there was really so much hostility towards President Obama that one has to be concerned that there are some who are beginning to approach. Notice the word I use, sir. Approach a comfort level to do something to harm the 44th president of the United States of America, Barack Obama. You know, there's just too many guys sitting in their cabins, sitting in their basement, maybe even like the president said, sitting on the edge of their bed, you know what I mean? Talking in terms of, you know, bringing justice and correcting the ills of America that took place over an eight-year period under this black guy born in Africa to a gorilla. I mean, I've been listening to conversations, gentlemen, since the tweet on Saturday, and it's scary. It's scary. I think that former President Barack Obama has handled it extremely well, if you will, under the circumstances. But still, you got folks out here, man, that feel like, you know, they need to be the Avengers. So that's my take, sir. That
uh-huh.
is a very dangerous moment. It is a dangerous moment constitutionally. It is a dangerous moment with respect to the stability of the United States of America, and it is a dangerous moment for the very important democratic institutions that govern this nation and its people. That's where I've been.
I agree with you. I also would like to kind of talk about the stability of the president himself, if you don't mind. Just I heard a...
No, this is the Donald Ron program.
Okay.
This is the Bob
okay.
Radio. Go right ahead. Because
okay.
you
well,
said
I,
it initially.
Yeah,
I heard
you know, with all the stuff that he's made up over time and all the false facts that he seems to believe and is constantly attacking Barack Obama with things that are patently false. You know, I heard a psychologist a few days ago kind of make this analogy. He said that if you're on a bus and the guy at the back of the bus is coughing and sneezing and he's blowing his nose, said, you know, he's got some kind of a problem. You may not know exactly what kind of virus he has or if he has an allergy or he's, like I said, he's allergic to something, but you know that there's a problem. And I don't know, am I going too far in saying that there's a problem here? There's an elephant in the room that we're not talking about?
I, sir, as a commentator, but more importantly, as a historian and et cetera, I'm not. I've heard those discussions that they started about 10 days ago, that there may be some instability as it pertains to the mental capacity of the president, but, you know, he is the president. There are powerful forces that have supported him. There was a significant number of Americans, though not the majority, who voted for him, you know, because he won the election through the Electoral College. But I'm not understanding the acceptability that is now in existence in this country, because as an African-American, as a person of a group, of a race that really had no rights and basically still have no rights in this country, how easily it was to render, if you will, punishment upon the Negro, if you will, going back to the days long even before slavery. And I'm serious, sir, when I say that I'm concerned with regards to the safety of President Barack Obama, with regards to the instability that is currently out there. I'm just amazed. And I know my co-host and associate, Mr. Allen, who comes from a very strong ecumenical background in history, that I just, it's shattering, really, spiritually, it's shattering the comfort level of so many Americans to let this current 45th president of the United States get away with the kind of analogies that he's making, the statements and declarations. I mean, we have to remember, this is still a man who still has not apologized to Barack Obama for starting in 2010, 2011, saying that Barack Obama was born in Africa in a shack, and his, you know, daddy was a big black-looking gorilla and all those kinds of things. I mean, the man has never seen, nor has he displayed the decency to apologize to the 44th president of the United States, his family, to his deceased mother. I'm talking about Barack Obama's mother, who died at an early age of cancer. His grandparents, who still live there in Florida, in Hawaii, and et cetera. But there seems to be a comfort level, and you know, Don. And I know Don's got some back channel stuff going on there. People calling. But this is the kind of stuff that got us as African Americans, as the sons and daughters of the Negro. This is the kind of stuff that got us lynched. And there was never a board of inquiry, and then people just kind of – and right here in Minnesota, sir, you're calling, and I know down there where you're at in Missouri and Kansas, down there, Negroes pulled out of their homes, pulled out of the facilities and jailed and taken and lynched and brutalized, et cetera. But I would hope that people would take a very serious, you know, analysis of the kind of emotional and physical – danger that is being generated in this country. I mean, for you to come out and accuse a man who is just with no scandal, you have to understand Barack Obama served faithfully the Constitution, the American people, its institutions, and et cetera, for 8 years without scandal. And Donald Trump really, with one tweet, has enraged a segment of the American population. And it's interesting the comfort level on the talk shows and the separate gentlemen in which people are talking as if it's a fact. You know, well, Barack Obama is going to, you know, the Congress needs to take a look at it. I mean, how dare you? I mean, how dare you, you know, so violate him, a man entrusted with the mantle of governance, and to violate him. And this is where I'm at. You get me going. Mr. Allen, you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I think, you know, to a point, Donald Trump has gotten there by using Twitter, using social media, but then again, I think that some of us have temporary amnesia. You know, we have to look at the last 8 years. We're not going to take anything away from the first black president in American history at all whatsoever, but, you know, I totally monitor social media quite a bit and on many hours, and I look at these posts. I look at people that look like us questioning the status. They're going, now, wait a minute, if this guy can get in office in January and do 15, 20 executive orders in under 100 days that are not user-friendly as far as the majority, a lot of Americans are concerned, what was the problem with the Obama administration doing those same types of actions for black Americans or for black America in general? You know, letting most prisoners out of jail in history did not help black America. Okay, that did not change the status. So, I mean, the temporary amnesia is really happening. The media is picking up on everything that he tweets. They're anxiously awaiting Twitter and YouTube videos, and they're distributing it out to the masses whichever way they want to spin it. And if you don't look at it for what it's worth, which is propaganda, then you kind of miss the point. And the guy knows already that he could tweet something crazy like he did. I was just looking at a list of just really tweets that he had. He says, President Obama is the worst president in U.S. history. Bill Clinton is the worst abuser of women in U.S. political history. Mitt Romney is one of the dumbest and worst candidates in the history of Republican politics. Ted Cruz is the worst liar. I mean, there
is that the same Ted Cruz that he's having? Well, hold it, though, Don. Is that the same?
Yeah. Well,
because it goes back to the
is.
Question our caller. Is this the same Ted Cruz that he's having dinner with tonight?
Yeah. That's
the game of politics.
Yeah, the president, I don't know if you missed that. The president is having dinner right now as we speak. They're probably wrapping up. He's having dinner with the same Ted Cruz. So does that imply the possibility of some mental imbalance, or are we as African Americans not even allowed to discuss or reflect on it?
I mean, there's, you know, I mean, I'm just looking, there's a huge list here, and you have people posting these lists that are obviously, you know, making an income off following what he does and putting it out into the public sphere. So, I mean, you got to look at this in two ways. Yeah, he's manipulating the mainstream quite a bit. But then again, you know, people take it for what it's worth. I mean, I'm sitting back and look at it. I'm a conservative, and I'm like, okay, he's using social media different.
people aren't used to this. They're not used to any president getting on Twitter and expressing, you know, his, or exercising his First Amendment
right. Oh, that's right, because one of the things that Donald Trump told us all is that the one thing that he wasn't was a politician. I understand now. That becomes justification. is that what that becomes justification? Okay. All right.
Well,
you know who also said that really in almost the same way with a different tone in justifying the changing of philosophy, morality, and et cetera in a place called Germany? It was a little guy by the name of Adolf Hitler when he came out of the Munich beer parlor. But no, I understand.
Yeah.
Caller, let me just tell this. Caller, do you have any additional reflections on us? And I have, let me just say this in defense of Barack Obama and his family. Don, do you think there was a possibility that one of the reasons that Barack Obama just didn't go in there and sign a whole lot of executive orders doing a whole lot of things for African Americans because he feared for his life, or should he not even been concerned about that?
I think he should have been concerned about it. Because the same people that are protecting the current president protected him. And he still, you know, I don't think it has anything to do with that. It has to do with what procedure, what type of, what was he looking at? What was his end game? You know, the
what
other day
who,
on the most...
Barack Obama's end game? What if I said from the left, Don, that his end game was staying alive?
He was successful, and one of the most liberal left leaning news agencies, MSNBC, the other night asked Senator Warren, why wasn't there more successes in the last 8 years, and she fumbled and stumbled, you know. So
you're talking about
Elizabeth Warren,
out of Massachusetts. Yeah,
yes,
so
yes.
Because contrary to what we may think, and you're an educator, a lot of folks don't know civics 101. So Mr. Allen was talking about Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat out of Massachusetts.
Can I say something?
Go ahead, sir.
It's not, you know, I noticed you said that he's using a new form of media, Twitter. It's not that he's using a new form of media. It's what the content of what he's saying is. That's the problem. It's what he's saying.
But who's that a problem?
Well, that's the problem. It's a problem. When the president of the United States accuses the former president of being a felon and then cannot prove it, cannot provide any proof, that's a problem. That's an issue. When he says that the former president was an illegal immigrant, an illegal alien in this country, and then cannot prove it, there's an issue there underlying that. You know, if I come on this program and say that the moon is made out of green cheese, I can say it, and I can say it on Twitter, but it's craziness. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Wow. If you would, Don, because this caller's representative and his organization asked another question earlier today, text me. Sir, I understand you had a question about what we made a couple weeks ago talking about habeas corpus. You wanted some clarification. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, I was just – because I think you were talking about the roundup
ICE
of illegals and the like and the possible violation of constitutional rights. So,
that's what we were. I've been rather but I guess it's not important. If the president doesn't tweet that it's not important, and I guess it's not. But habeas corpus, and identified in the Black's Law Directory as writ of habeas corpus, deals with people who are rounded up and are not processed, if you will. In other words, they are taken into custody. No one knows where they're at. Loved ones, their attorneys and others cannot find them, cannot contact them. They're held incommunicado and et cetera. And so what happened was amendments were made, you know, to the Constitution you know, a couple of years after the founding of the Republic. And allegedly all of us are protected certainly by habeas corpus. In other words, that we must be produced, quote unquote, once we have been taken into custody, we must be produced, we must be brought before a magistrate. The charges against us are to be enunciated, if you will, and we are to be allowed a hearing as it pertains to the charges. Now, that goes hand in hand with due process, but due process is not to be confused with writ of habeas corpus or vice versa, because they are two separate legal entities in and of themselves. Mm-hmm. And ICE now, and, you know, maybe some people need to be concerned about it. Maybe the president will text something. He made a number of promises today to members of the Black Caucus in his office. But when you start talking in terms of rounding people up and all of a sudden you can't find out where they're at. Now, see, we had that happen right after 9/11, Don, if you remember, after the 9/11 attack, about 600 young men, primarily of color, were rounded up in the city of Detroit and were put into the rendition program. I don't know if you remember what rendition is. You can call it up on your computer. Rendition is the program that was brought into play by National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, where people were being taken, put in on airplanes, and flown to all kinds of places, not just Guantanamo, but Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, and et cetera. And Operation Rendition was to take you there for the purpose of torture, you know. In the city of Detroit, particularly in Dearborn, you will talk to leaders in the Muslim community who will tell you that there have been a significant number of young men that never could be accounted for. And so that's the reason that some of us who are constitutionalists are concerned when we saw the directive, gentlemen, we didn't have the attorney general. He was too busy perjuring himself and lying, but we didn't have an attorney general in place permanently, if you will. But when the executive order, important process came out and said that we can, quote unquote, or ICE, that's Immigration Naturalization Service, can round up anybody that they want. Now, here's the problem, gentlemen, for me. You see, the Mexicans, the Muslims, and the Black Americans, a lot of us all look alike. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, me and Don both is what you call light-complected Negroes, okay? And so it wouldn't be too hard to confuse us and somebody look at us and say that we from Central America or we're from Honduras or somewhere like that, you know, Brazil, Colombia, or et cetera. And if you got that real good breed of hair, say that you look like you're from the Middle East, and we get rounded up, and we're never heard from again, you know. And so I thought that it was important as a constitutionalist that we needed to examine this authority that has been given, and this had nothing to do with the Ninth Circuit case, if you will, as it pertains to the Muslim countries and et cetera. This was an independent action taken by administrative order within the Pacific Department's Homeland Safety and et cetera. And I've been amazed at the information that we've been receiving, and Mr. Allen, my associate, has picked that information up on his computer all the time. I'm amazed at the number of people of foreign extraction / foreign-born who have been picked up and have disappeared. But, hey, you know, hey, we shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't be concerned about it. Down in the South, anything else for us?
No. That's all. I just wanted to get my concerns out about what's going on, the stability and the like. So, and I think it's a serious issue. And also with Steve Bannon, I didn't know if, you probably already know this, Steve Bannon considers himself a Leninist. And
yes, he does.
Exactly.
In fact, Steve Bannon and a couple of others 3 days ago, on one of those right-wing, you know, websites and et cetera, said that there needs to be a purge of the left in America.
Yeah.
And that, again, reminds me of an undertaking, if you will, excuse the pun, by the way, an undertaking in a place called Germany that led to the deaths of millions. But, yes, Mr. Bannon and others have said that there needs to begin to be a purge of leftists in the United States.
I just think, you know, we're kind of right now flirting with disaster, with the gentleman we have right now at present. So,
okay.
But I'll go ahead and listen off the air here.
All right, thank you, sir. Thank you for
okay,
calling.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, yeah. Bye-bye.
Don, give out that number, man. I know some people must have some ideas from the right, you know.
They sure do. The number is 347-426-3904. We have another caller. Caller, go ahead, please. Caller, you're live on the air.
Gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Greetings, gentlemen.
Comrade M., how are you doing,
gentlemen,
sir?
I'm doing very good. I just happened to tune in, and I guess, you know, and listening to, you know, Mr. Edwards just for the last few minutes, I would just like to, you know, I mean, ask your co-host, I mean, you know, in light of the statements that you said, Mr. Edwards, about the possibility of being rounded up and,
yes,
you know, being rounded up and, you know, lassoed and, you know, put in concentration camps or what have you. I mean, especially people, as you said, like yourself, I mean, I think I might even fall into that type of category where someone might be able to misidentify me, you know, all of a sudden say, you know, I'm from one of these type of countries. But in light of all that, and I know your co-host, and I want to address this to him. I mean, I know he's been such a staunch supporter of the current administration.
Don's plan that we shall overcome. Come on, Don, you listen to the question.
I just want to pose the question. Is he in support of this, you know, rounding up people and, you know, keeping them out of the country and targeting people? I would just, you know, I'll hang up and listen because I really would like to hear.
Don't hang up because you asked me three. You asked me three questions. Am I in support of rounding up people, getting people out of the country, and doing all this other stuff? I haven't. I know that ICE has been rounding up people since before this president was in office, and I have not heard the outcry that I have heard until now. Okay, in 2008, in our dear beloved city in Minneapolis, at Incarnation Church, with over 150 Hispanic Latino people, of many of them undocumented, at a forum where Congressman Keith Ellison assured this community that they wouldn't be rounded up. And a week later, the meatpacking place over there on Lake Street in Blaisdell, right between Blaisdell and Nistrit Licklit, used to be over there back in 2008, not sure if it's still there, they went in there and tore that place apart, took many people to jail, took many people, broke up many families, took many fathers and mothers. Didn't hear a word. You didn't hear any complaints. You didn't hear nothing. Now this guy gets in and directs that direction and says, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to clean up. We're going to shut the borders down and do that. And everybody's screaming and hollering. But yet we have millions of homeless school children. We have millions of homeless veterans. We have nonprofits that suck in millions. I'm talking about locally, millions of dollars, and black people, Hispanic people, Asian people don't have nothing. Okay, I think our focuses are so twisted right now that it's ridiculous. You know, if you put first thing first, you would know that one white man in Washington, D.C. is not the focus. Okay, but everyone's looking that way while everything else is going on. As a conservative, he's not going to affect me just as Barack Obama did not affect me. I moved forward. Okay, and if we want to waste 4 years or 8 years or however long he's going to be there, focusing on this one man, we're going to miss out. We're already missing out here. Mr. Edwards and Em, you all both know this if you've been following that stuff at the state capitol. And I'm just trying to bring it, you know, from a national to a local level. I'm watching our people get up in front of the state legislators and talk about, well, this year, you know, last year you gave us $35 million. Okay, yet there's no report. This year we want to do X number of dollars, but we want to focus on agriculture. You know, Negro, it snows here in November, okay? And there's people that are hungry. I mean, what's the point? It's a game. It goes back and forth. I'm pretty tired of it personally. And, you know, I guess that's my answer in a nutshell. It's like it depends on what you want to focus on. You know, and you ask me if I'm in support. I'm not in support of nothing crazy, usually. I have people that will question that. But the thing is, what are we going to be in support of? You know, what are we going to look at as a people, as a group? as organizations. I'm done.
Well, yeah, are you still with us? There's a certain a response. Let me just correct one thing, though, Don. You want to kind of be careful because I was there when the roundup took place of the Mexicans. And by the way, I think they finally in fact, it was right after that raid that they closed down that meat packing facility. But there were people that raised protests and et cetera. Yeah. There were people that did it, but what happened was, first of all, you had a very liberal mayor in the city of Minneapolis by the name of R.T. Ryback, and he basically suppressed, as well as the Democratic Party, that you are not a member of, basically suppressed the issue, if you will, though in 2008, we must remember, the Democrats were in control of the national government. So, you know, we got to balance all of that out. Again, 2008 is what you read from. Off your computer the Republicans were in control.
Ms. Harris, I didn't read that off the computer. I was in the room, you know, when that happened. I was in the room when Congressman Ellison said that. Okay,
oh, and Congressman Ellison made the promise. I see. Okay.
Yes.
2008.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people did raise the question to the Democratic Party and the mayor and all of those folks and. Folks said they were going to work on it, that some lawyers were hired, if you will. I mean, remember Peter Brown. I don't know if you know him, Don. Peter Brown was president of the Lawyers Guild of Minnesota, and some others, particularly out there on that south side, tried to do some things and et cetera. But, you know, it was a Republican-controlled government. It was interesting. It was a Republican-controlled government in Washington and a Democratic-controlled government here in the city of Minneapolis. But, Tim, I want to give you a chance because the response is certain to you, your observation.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, I appreciate that response, you know. I mean, but at the same time, I want to say, you know, you look at the meat plant, you know, the big raid and the raid that they've had, I think, in southern Minnesota also. I mean, I think they've hit some of those packing plants down
and
there.
And the Red River Valley also. Go ahead.
They've hit those. And so, but at the same time, I go up and down Lake Street, and I don't see the Mexican certain up and down Lake Street. I mean, so, I mean, I guess I just say all that to say I'm trying to figure out, and I think I'm with Mr. Allen on this, I'm trying to figure out what is really going on here. You know, what is the real game? I mean, and I think that's what we're really trying to get to. I mean, yeah.
On one hand,
you see all these people, you know, they're being targeted, the Muslims, some of the Somalis, they seem to be targeted. But on the other hand, you see a lot of them that are still thriving here, especially in the Twin Cities area.
Yeah, and I agree.
So,
you're talking about Somalis. Absolutely. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mr. Allen. Go right ahead.
The only problem I have, okay, and I'm just going to tell you what the overall picture, I think that people come here. My dad was a Jamaican immigrant who came here to Houston, Texas, and then moved to Minnesota, where 7 or 8 years later he became a citizen, had a contracting business, and did very well, okay? So I'd be a hypocrite to go on GOP Republican talking points and talk that mess about immigrants, because some people, majority of them are successful, okay? The thing is that I'm trying to figure out and looking at the whole picture, just sitting back, egging people on social media to see what they have to say, it's like, what is the end game? Why are you guys focusing on this while I go to a place where, again, you have kids riding the city bus and light rail all night that are homeless, okay? Why are we not focusing on the problems that we can fix here locally? And Mr. Everson M., we have someone calling from a 202 area code that has called in a couple times.
Let's get them in. Sure. Go ahead. Let's get them in. Stay with us, Sam.
Go ahead. You're live on the air. Go ahead. You're live on the air, area code 202. Go ahead. Would you like to talk to the host or co-host? I guess not. Okay, we'll just put you back in the queue. Thanks for listening. Don't be scared. We're not going to chase you off. But yeah, it's very interesting just to look at this whole – because I was talking the other day. Yeah, you saw that post I put up on social media on Facebook about that guy that shot that dude in the
parking ramp.
Yeah.
Not too long ago here. Okay.
You talking about a couple days ago in Minnetonka.
Now, Ms. Edwards, this is funny because I posted that, okay, this guy, he wasn't a Muslim. He's not a member of ISIS. He's not dark-complected, and he's a domestic terrorist. Now, I had Republican types get on that thread and said, oh, you're no Republican. I said, well, wait a minute. I said, now, if I have to be the kind of Republican that has to fit in, that has to sell out my community to be a Republican, that's not the kind of Republican I'm going to be. I said, I see this guy. He looks crazy. He looks like a zombie. You know, these are the kind of guys that shoot up churches and movie theaters. Okay? Domestic terrorists. You got to call it what it is.
Yeah,
okay?
White domestic.
And they came after me, Mr. Edwards. I mean, with those claws out and everything. And I said, now, just a minute.
Yeah.
Do I have to hold my butt cheeks tight and say and follow you around like step and fetch it? I said, I don't think so. So there's a game here playing on all kinds of levels. I'm not a master at it, but I'm sitting here, I'm watching it, and it's a distraction. It's a distraction.
Well,
it's
gentlemen, let me just say this, because we talked about it quite a bit and a couple times. M joined us a couple years ago. You know, I saw the same pattern. I've seen it in a lot of situations. M and I are closer than you are, Mr. Allen, and we are children of the 1960s, if you will. But you see, I was always fascinated by how everybody, Democrat, Republican, basically dismissed the terrorist attack on Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston. No one has really ever asked any questions about Tillman Ruth.
And
they've left you with the impression, and we talked about it on this program, man. I've talked about it a number of times. And during the time that you were away from us, Don, over the last couple of months, I talked about it when they finally gave me the death sentence. The fact of the matter is they really want to get rid of Tillman, okay, because they don't want Tillman to get to talking about who. And gentlemen, understand, and I use this term a number of times on most broadcasts on this very show, no one wants to talk about who radicalizes these white folks. I thought that's where you were going. Who radicalizes these white folks?
Wow. Yeah. Wow, what a point.
Thank you, sir. And I talked about it. I wrote about it in my newspaper columns and et cetera and on my website. Who radicalized Dylan Root? Who radicalizes these individuals? You don't hear no discussion going on about that. In fact, Em, you are a very astute individual. When have you ever heard the term radicalization used with regards to any of these white terrorists? And the reason I brought this up is the most recent shooting in Kent, Washington, which nobody's talking about. They buried it quickly, where a white terrorist shot and wounded and paralyzed a Sikh. The Sikhs are part of India, gunned him down and told him, get out of my country. Now, the caller from the first caller we had had raised the issue with us 2 weeks ago of the two East Indians who were shot in an Applebee's cafe in a place called Olathe, Kansas, by a white radical, if you will. Gentlemen, I never heard anyone raise the question as he was being, reviewed and analyzed and et cetera. No one asked who radicalized him. And when they brought him into court, when they brought him back from Missouri back to Kansas, if you will, to Olathe, which is a suburb of Kansas City, Kansas, and he went to talking in terms, he wanted to kill them all. I never heard a single, and that includes, said Mr. Allen, what you said. It includes our black commentators and et cetera who make nice salaries, who sit there and smack their lips and speak softer than the average woman kind of thing. I never heard anybody ask the question about white radicalization. Gentlemen, go ahead, sir.
What a point. I mean, what a point. You know, I've never heard, you know, the first question you asked, you know, who radicalizes these people? But not only that, I've never ever heard them referred to as white terrorists.
Other than by you.
I've never even heard of it referred to that, even though the mayhem, the damage they caused, clearly, I mean, is at the level of terrorism, but it's never called that. I think that's quite an interesting statement.
And think about radicalization. You have never heard a single commentator, black, white, you know, green, red, polka dot, from Mars, has never raised the question, except I hate to say it, this commentator here, because they listen and et cetera, and even on these on demands on this program and et cetera, we have talked about that for a number of years, and you cannot push even some of our quote unquote more enlightened African American leaders never really talked in terms of white radicalization or white terrorists.
Well,
now,
you know,
the number one in modern times, it was Dylan Root. It was Dylan Root in Charleston, South Carolina. Never said it. Never raised any questions. You never heard much about what his history was. Just old little old country boy out there in the backyard with his guns just shooting and et cetera. But I take you back to our one of the programs here, and I take you back to one of my television programs the week that he was ultimately apprehended. I never saw anybody make a better getaway than Dylan Root did on the night that he killed 9 African-Americans in a prayer service, gentlemen, in a prayer service in Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. I mean, this man sat there representing everything that was evil. Oh, he's going to die. I guess he'll die. They may execute him. But he sat there with there actually were 12 African-Americans at that. It was on a Wednesday, too, gentlemen, just like tonight. And he sat there and looked in those black folks' eyes with the passion of Satan. And they were talking about Jesus Christ and God and et cetera. And he pulled out his weapon, man. And you remember he allowed one of the African-Americans, a woman, who was extremely traumatized by this, by saying, "I want you to live so you can tell the world what I've done here." Remember that, gentlemen? That was his statement to her after he had shot her.
Yep.
Yeah. She lay on the floor. She thought he was going to kill her. Now, this is a cat that had calculated and had been radicalized, if you will, and conditioned with hatred. Ain't nobody ever talked about it in this country, gentlemen. I just leave you with that. We're coming up, but go ahead, Mr. Allen. Maybe next week we'll have some callers. Maybe a couple white folks will call us and tell us when they've heard that kind of discussion.
Yeah, we have another caller.
And I'll tell you one person that I've never heard talk about it is our 5th Congressional Congressman. Oops.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey, all right. How are you?
All right, brother. Elsie, what's up?
You know, you guys are speaking right to the heart of the real issues. But I think that if I may be so bold to say that I think that we are now entering into this day and age where, again, that type of violence is accepted, especially due to the new administration. And let's be frank, some of the encouraging by Trump himself, and then just emphatic denials by other members in his administration. So I think that we need to get used to the fact that hate is now going to fill our politics even more, and our dialogue when it comes to politics and other things of that nature. Things are like that now going to be filled hate. There's a lot of people that support this administration that blindly support it and refuse to acknowledge any of the things that he does. It's just ridiculous. And so I certainly am now realizing that disrespect and civil discourse is now going to be the new norm.
Let me ask you this question while we have you, Mr. Nelson. I know you and Mr. Allen also are on the media circle. You have a program together on a couple of our commercial stations. What is your feeling about what I just indicated as a part of the discussion we were having here about, have you ever heard anybody talk about white radicalization?
Yeah. Well,
come
I
on,
mean.
Have you ever heard that discussion? Huh?
Well, in what form? I mean, you know, I mean, it's happening every day.
Well,
let me
give you the example. The form, like radicalization, means that you radicalize a person to do things that you want them to do. In the case of murdering people and killing people, obviously you radicalize them to be a murderer, to be an assassin, et cetera. The topic that specific, because I don't deal with speculation and et cetera, because I maintain that what happened with Dylann Roof and what happened at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, was actually a prelude to what you're just talking about now. We just did not understand it fully. A lot did not understand it fully because we had not had the election of 2016. But have you ever heard white folks talk about radicalization of these white terrorists? And have you ever heard anybody talk about white terrorists?
Well, no, they refuse to. I mean, they like to talk about radical Islamic terrorists. And when you bring up the fact that most of the terrorists, especially lately, has been homegrown terrorists and white Christians, that's ignored. And it's scoffed at. And now the fact that the ban is in place just reinvigorates their notion that it's just the fact that it's minorities that cause crime and wreak havoc in neighborhoods and across the country.
Yeah, you know, we need to deal, gentlemen, y'all do what you want to do, need to deal with the whole thing about minorities, because really the fact of the matter is, white Americans are coming pretty close to being the minority population-wise in this country. They keep talking about minorities. People overuse that, if you will, because when they talk about it, white, you know, minorities, particularly when they're talking about contract jobs and et cetera, they're talking about white women. Oops. But anyways.
Yeah, they are the new minority. They definitely are. They have been qualified as the new minority, which is a bunch of garbage. But also just goes to prove that the fact that more whites are on government substances than black folks. And so now the fact that even locally they're now trying to quantify the white woman as struggling and downtrodden is ridiculous rhetoric.
Yeah, but let me say this to you, gentlemen, to both of you. Numerically, I say it for a time, numerically, there are more Caucasian females than there are Caucasian males. So how are they a minority? Hey, appreciate you calling in, Brother Nelson. Mr. Allen, you're going to wrap us up, send us all on, man. All right, take care.
Thank you.
Don, I think this was an excellent dialogue. I just hope that maybe we can get some of our white listeners to call in next week, don't you think so, and talk to us about the radicalization that has taken place with regards to white folk.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
We'll get the Republicans and Democrats. All right, man. Take us on home, brother.
All right. Here goes James Brown. Thanks. We'll be back next week.
James Brown.
Some people say we got a lot of malice. Some say it's a lot of nerve. But I say we won't quit moving until we get what we deserve.